wrong with Conroy. Darren snorted.
Forgive me, sir, but I've known that for quite some time.
No, no, he said, still whispering, too afraid to give his thoughts full voice. I saw something tonight in him. Saw someone. He took a deep and shaking breath, let it out. Someone who wasn't Conroy. For a moment he wore two faces.
Your Highness,
now Darren was whispering, looking afraid.
I don't know what you mean.
He stepped back. Neither do I.
What you're saying, it sounds fantastical.
I know that. Insane, too. He forced a smile. But I'm not crazy, Darren. Witnessing that execution hasn't robbed me of my wits or filled my head with wild imaginings. I know what I saw. And I know this, too. Since the moment we opened Barl's library, since Derm found her hidden diary, something's been wrong in this kingdom. I don't know what, but I intend to find out. Still fearful, Darren stiffened his spine.
Yes, sir. But how?
Gar glanced up, as though he could see right through the ceiling and into his library. The answer's in that diary, Darren. I can feel it in my bones. I must finish translating it, and there isn't a moment to lose. Very soon now, I fear it will be too late, and Conroy, or whoever, whatever he is, will bring us all to ruin. He headed for the staircase, almost running. Darren called after him.
And me, Your Highness, can't I do something?
Of course you can, he said, turning on the staircase. You can think of a way to rescue Matt. Chapter 30.
Conroy?
Morg kept his entranced gaze on the blood-soaked straw around the executioner's block. The glim-lit square was almost empty to Vulcan now. A handful of industrious individuals were plucking wet scarlet wheat stalks from the ground, darting in quickly before a guard could interfere with their relic-taking. The body was already removed, bundled into sacking and taken away to the guardhouse to await its promised ignominious destruction. Willa had gone with it, eager and gloating. All in all, a good night's work. Behind him, the cleric shifted restlessly.
Conroy!
Sighing, he turned, considered the old fool coldly.
Your Majesty!
Holzer's pale cheeks coloured.
Forgive me, Your Majesty. Sir, we need to speak.
He turned away again, this time resting his gaze on the guardhouse, wherein languished an Ulkin of great interest, one who'd been held in firm affection by dead Asher, and might, with judicious winnowing, reveal some knowledge of Asher's unexpected abilities, just in case there was some other inconvenient Ulkin somewhere who could yet interfere with his plans.
Tomorrow, Holes.
Standing a discreet distance, ever hopeful Sorvold and Daltrey waited to see if their friend and king required anything more of them. Holes spared them a wary glance and stepped closer.
I'm sorry, but it can't wait, he said, his voice insistently lowered. Tonight sees the end of an era for our kingdom, an era that has died with bloodshed, and a certain amount of unexpected excitement. As Lur's oath-sworn caretakers, it is urgent that you and I confer, in private. Between us, as Baal's chosen instruments, we maintain the spiritual and temporal balance in this land. What we do next will set the tone for generations of Dorinan and Ulkin to come.
Well, no, because Lur's current crop of milk and water magicians was its last, and the Ulkin were irrelevant. But since he was, for the moment, forced to continue his charade as the dutiful, dedicated king, he couldn't let Holes suspect that. And, in truth, There was no desperate need to question the captured Stablemeister immediately. Obedient Auric had him safely locked away. This mat would keep a few hours longer, and a night spent stewing in fear would doubtless render him more pliable, more likely to speak without encouragement. Searching Asher's mind had nearly killed the Oaken untimely, and Asher had been an Oaken, stronger than most. It might well be unwise to kill this one too quickly, and with magic. Auric's inconvenient ethics might prompt him to whisper in the wrong ears. He favored Baal-sought holes with a smile.
Ephraim, your wisdom as ever prevails. Indeed, let us talk.
With a raised eyebrow, he summoned Payne Sorvold to his side.
Your Majesty?
He acknowledged Sorvold's bow with the slightest of nods.
Ah, Payne. Baalsman Holes and I have weighty matters of state to discuss. See that my horse is taken to the Baal's Chapel stables.
Sorvold bowed again.
Certainly, sir.
His public face was impeccable. Morg almost laughed to see the churning disquiet behind it, the barely leashed desire to partake in those weighty state discussions. Sorvold's ambition stank like rotting flesh. For desultory amusement, he touched his fingertips to Sorvold's arm.
Patience, friend, he murmured. Walking, one still reaches the desired destination, and with far less risk of a fall.
Sorvold's greedy eyes glittered.
Indeed, Your Majesty.
As Sorvold and Daltrey withdrew, conferring, Holes made a little noise of disapproval.
I confess, I had thought better of Payne Sorvold. Such naked self-interest is displeasing to Baal. Those of us privileged to be in the upper ranks of Doranin society should care more for her desires than our own.
Drivel, drivel, drivel. Was there no end to the man's pious platitudes?
Suppressing contempt, Morg smiled.
As you say, Ephraim, but a king is confined to the council at hand, and if Payne Sorvold's voice is a part of the choir, we must assume he sings with Baal's blessing, yes? Her choice may seem dubious to us, but is it meet that we question it?
The rebuke stung fresh colour into Holes's cheeks. He bowed.
Your Majesty.
Morg smiled.
And now let us retire to your rooms, Ephraim, that we might best decide how together we can steer our beloved kingdom to its rightful destiny.
Indeed, Conroyd, agreed Holes. Let us.
Fueled by desperation, Gar returned to his study of Baal's diary. There was no more time for a measured, methodical deconstruction of her memories. He had to risk haste, risk racing through each entry in his search for the key words and phrases that would help him explain their current predicament. Had to subdue the historian, whose love of language and detail cried out for a leisurely perusal, and let the king's needs hold sway. The king's. Yes. In his heart, though his magic was now a bitter memory, he believed he was still Lyr's rightful king, its guardian, its protector, in a way that transcended magic and weatherworking and trappings of power, the transience of an externally bestowed authority. His father's words, spoken so long ago, echoed in his mind like thunder.
Baal has a destiny for you, my son.
This was it. Finding her diary, learning its secrets and using them to save Lyr from a danger he could not define but knew was upon them, that was connected intimately, inexplicably, to the fate of Conroy Geralt. Ignoring the spiking pain between his eyes, indifferent to the dull ache in his shoulders, his spine, uncaring of the throbbing in his face where Conroy's ring had cut him open, Gar bent all his energies to those secrets uncovering. Every time he lifted his gaze from the diary's ancient faded paper and ink, the image of Conroy's dual face rose before him, spurring him on. Wisely, Darren left him alone. The answer came hours later, as the first intimations of light appeared in the sky beyond his library window. Not dawn, but dawn's harbinger. Exhausted, he'd had no choice but to slow the speed of his reading. The diary's later entries were scrawled hastily, haphazardly, as though Baal had been as pressed for time then as he was now. They were almost illegible. The incantations she'd recorded were of no use to him, of course. Not any more. But if he could find Asher, prevail upon him for assistance one last time. The Doranan arcane heritage was appalling. No wonder there'd been a war. No wonder Baal had hidden the diary and Derm after her. No wonder such magics had been erased from his ancestors' memories. The thought of such magic unleashed during Travoil's schism, upleashed now by Conroyd against any who dared oppose him. Sickened, his fatigued eyes burning, acutely aware of the fast approaching day, Gar flogged his tired mind onwards. Baal had written, "But while a locked room is safe, without a key it is also a trap. So I have fashioned one, and in time I will use it to open a window in the wall, that I may see what has become of the world beyond. And if it be safe then, we will go home. I swear it on my life. One day we will all go home." A window in the wall? Thrumming with tiredness, he slumped in his chair and let the implications of Baal's words unfold in his mind. Fragments of her earlier comments resurfaced and clicked into place, part of the puzzle he was trying so desperately to piece together. "I've not told a soul of the power we discovered, the key to immortality. He is coming. He is coming, I can feel it. He will find us, no matter how long it takes to search each corner of the world." A window in the wall. Was that the answer? Had Derm read Baal's diary from cover to cover? And had he, in all his pride and arrogance, opened Baal's window, breached their safe, sealed kingdom, and placed them all at risk? He heard again Derm's harsh and dying words.
"Born, forgive me. I couldn't stop him."
Gar dragged his fingers over his face, struggling to understand. Stop who? Stop Morg? No, it couldn't be that. Morg was dead, had to be dead. Immortality was a dream, not reality. There was another explanation, one he hadn't thought of yet. Behind his closed eyes, he saw once more that rippling alchemical change cross Conroyd's face, remembered the oddness in his writing, as though another hand had guided the pen, remembered the gaping hole in the fence at Salbert's Eyrie, where horses and carriage had plunged over the edge without any attempt to swerve or stop, taking with them three powerful magicians without a fight. A window in the wall, and an immortal warrior mage, steeped in evil, bent on revenge.
"Darren!"
The old man appeared in the doorway a few moments later, shaken and breathless.
Sir, what is it?"
Gar pushed to his feet, clutching at the desk to keep from falling sideways.
"Get down to the guardhouse, now, before the city starts stirring. Find Pelin Oryk and bring him back here."
He pounded a fist against his head, trying to rattle coherent thought free of crippling exhaustion.
No, not here. It's too dangerous. Take him to House Torvig's crypt. I'll meet you there."
Darren looked as sleepless as Gar felt. In rumpled clothing, his hair awry, he wrung his hands in agitation.
"Sir, has something happened?"
Slowly, acutely aware of all his aches and pains and his swollen cut cheek burning, Gar nodded.
"I think I've figured it out, Darren. I think I know what we're up against. Who
we're up against. Darren swallowed. And do I want to know, sir? He shook his head, feeling sick.
No.
No, Darren. You really don't. Pellin Auric jerked upright in his chair with a snort, furious with himself for dozing, and looked to his prisoner to make sure he was still there and breathing. He was curled on his side against the cell's far wall, draped in a blanket. The stablemeister watched his captor with silent wariness. Perhaps not surprisingly, given the execution in the malfunctioning Glimfire and the general air of unrest, the guards who'd apprehended Matt last night had been heavy-handed in their methods, enthusiastic in their eagerness to restrain him. They'd brought him in unconscious. Now, in the murky, just-dawn light, Auric saw that the man was a patchwork quilt of cuts and bruises, none life-threatening, but all uncomfortable, and with more discomfort still to come. Creaking a little, Auric got to his feet, stretched, hearing all the bones in his neck go pop, then stared down at the silent, unmoving prisoner on the floor before him. His Majesty sent word late last night. He'll be here later today to interrogate you himself. If you're wise, you'll tell him whatever you know, and quickly. Asha resisted, and paid a heavy price. Matt blinked his swollen, blood-crusted eyes.
I don't know anything.
For your sake, I hope not. I warn you, Matt, since you're a man who, to the best of my knowledge, has done no harm, our new king is ruthless in the pursuit of justice. He'll use magic to tear the truth from you, just as he used it on Asher.
Magic?
Said Matt, and sat up wincing.
But that's forbidden. You're the captain of the city. How could you sanction?
Captains don't sanction, he replied. Or object. Not when a king commands, even when their conscience pricked them, even though they had grave doubts. And was that duty or cowardice speaking? An uncomfortable question he wasn't sure how to answer.
Tell him what you know, Matt. Put an end to all this misery. I told you,
said Matt, and closed his eyes.
I don't know anything.
Well, if the stablemeister was telling the truth, surely he had nothing to fear, magic or no magic. And if the man was lying, the king would soon dig the truth free. Either way, it was out of his hands. He was weary and hungry, and needed an hour or three at home. The guardhouse was empty, save for Bunder on front desk duty, and young Jessop filling out reports. All the other lads, on active duty or recalled for special circumstances, were out patrolling the city, maintaining order after last night's tumult, and hastening all the sightseers back to their homes, either in Dorana or beyond it. He sent Jessop out back to keep a close eye on their prisoner, and paused for a word with Stolid Ox. I'm off home for a bit. Stay alert and send for me if there's fresh trouble. Letting himself out through the guardsman's entrance, he saw that the day promised fair, with flushes of pink on the rim of the horizon. Smothering a yawn, he turned for the small gate leading into the alley, and was accosted from the shadows alongside the guardhouse building.
Captain Auric! Captain Auric, a word!
He knew that whispering voice. It was the prince's secretary, Darren. A good man, if a witterer.
Sir, Auric said, approaching. Is something wrong? Come out into the light where I can see you.
The man didn't move.
Captain Auric, do you love this kingdom?
And what kind of a question was that? He scowled, feeling fratched and fractious.
Maester Secretary, it's been a long night, and I'm in no mood for games. State your business or be on your way. It's a grave offence to loiter on guardhouse property.
The old man inched forward until just his face was visible. His gaze darted left and right, seeking eavesdroppers.
Captain, we must speak in private. Will you come?
Come where? And why? What do you want to speak of?
Darren eased a little further forward. He looked exhausted, terrified.
I can't say, Captain. Not here. Please, I beg you, come. In the name of our beloved Kingborn.
That name stilled his tongue. He looked more closely at Darren, recognized honesty and desperation.
I was on my way home, he grumbled. I've been on duty now a good long time, sir.
I know that, said Darren. I'd not ask if it weren't important.
He sighed. How important?
A matter of life or death, the old man said. For all of us.
He held out a bundled cloak.
Wear this. Pull the hood low over your face. We don't want you recognized.
Auric took the cloak and shrugged it on as the old man settled the hood of his own cloak over his graying head. If this is not urgent but a trick, or worse still, some lawless skullduggery.
Come with me, Captain, said Darren, and see for yourself.
Groaning, sighing, Auric went with him. He wasn't surprised to find he'd been taken to meet with Prince Gar. The choice of meeting place was more unexpected. House Torvig's family crypt. Chilly and filled full of candles and bodies. The prince looked sleepless, high-strung and backed against an invisible wall. The cut on his cheekbone was scabbed over, the flesh around it bruised and puffy.
Thank you for coming, Captain. Pellin. May I call you Pellin?
Auric nodded.
Of course.
Pellin, I need your help. Lur needs your help. Can we count on you?
His spine snapped straight. I'm an officer of the Crown. My loyalty has never been questioned. Well, not reasonably anyway, or more than once. The prince smiled. There was something ghastly in his eyes. He stood beside his dead sister's coffin, his fingers caressing her, the effigy's cold stone foot.
I know that, he said.
But you're also an officer who's never been asked to face what we are facing, to accept what will sound to you like the ravings of a madman.
Careful, careful.
Auric moistened dry lips, glanced once at the old man who'd brought him here, standing now in the corner, then settled his attention on the prince.
And what is it we're facing, Your Highness? I believe the destruction of our kingdom.
Well, yes, that did sound like the ravings of a madman, and he was so damned tired.
Sir, you'll need to speak more plainly. You believe that we're in danger? From whom? From what? And where is your proof?
So speaks the city guardsman. The prince shook his head. I'm not sure you'd call it proof, Pellin. Auric glanced again at Darren. The old man's eyes didn't leave the prince's face. From his expression, he at least believed what Gar was saying. Or did he just want to believe it? Hard to say. Looking back at the prince, he thought for a moment, choosing his words carefully.
Your Highness, have you told the king of your concern?
The question provoked a harsh, choked-off bark of laughter.
Pellin, dear Pellin, Conroyd is my concern.
You're talking treason. I can't hear this, he snapped, and burned Darren with a look. You shouldn't have brought me here, old man. If you love your prince, take him away, now, and I'll do my best to forget the three of us ever spoke.
Spinning on his heel, chaotic with regret and sorrow and fury, he headed for the door. The prince said harshly, I lied about Asha. He stopped, listened to his thudding, hammering heart.
Lied, sir?
Footsteps behind him, a gentle hand touching, tugging him round. The prince's face was stark. No royal mask, no polished public presentation, raw emotion only, with everything laid bare. He flinched.
What he told you was true. All of it,
the prince said, as softly as though they were in chapel. I asked him to do magic. His reply was automatic.
Ulk can have no magic.
The prince smiled sadly. Asha does. Did. I can't explain it, but it's true. And he used it to protect this kingdom. When my own powers failed, I gave him the weather magics myself, willingly. He never conspired to steal my crown. He was the truest subject a king could ever have, the truest friend. In every way that matters, Asha was innocent. All his life a guardsman. He'd learned, thought he'd learned, to tell when truth was spoken.
But you renounced him, he said, incredulous. You signed the execution order yourself.
The prince nodded. I had to. Even though I'd sworn to protect him, I had to sign his death warrant. If I refused, Conroyd said he'd slaughter your people. I believed him. Could a living man be turned to stone? It felt like it. He swallowed, struggling against the pain in his throat, his chest.
He was innocent, but I killed him.
No, Pelin, the prince said. The law killed him.
It's the same thing.
The prince looked to Darren then, as though he were seeking advice or absolution. The old man shrugged.
I think you must, sir. We've come too far not to.
The prince sighed. You're no murderer, Pelin. Asha isn't dead. The man who lost his life last night was unknown to me. Asha lives somewhere, and if we're to save our kingdom from destruction, you have to help me find him. Auric felt his legs give way. He stumbled sideways, fending off the hand stretched out to help him. Fetching up against a cold brick wall, he pressed a hand across his face and fought to catch his ragged breath.
This is madness, he muttered. The rotten fruit of overwork. I must be dreaming.
He lowered his sheltering hand and looked at the prince.
Tell me I'm dreaming.
If you are, Pelin, it's a nightmare, and the rest of us are snared in it with you. The prince reached inside his buttoned coat and pulled out a battered, leather-bound journal. It looked ancient. This is Blessed Baal's diary. Derm discovered it and hid its existence. It contains our long-lost magics, and an incantation that opens a window in the wall.
A window? Your Highness.
I know, the prince said quickly. I know how this sounds, but please bear with me. I believe Derm used this spell. His face twisted with bitterness and regret. He was always a curious man, and an arrogant one, convinced he was never in danger, no matter the risks he took. Auric stepped away from the wall and clasped his hands behind his back. Buried beneath confusion and bewilderment, there was shame that he'd let himself be so undisciplined as to show such open dismay.
Very well. A window.
But what has that to do with Asher? With anything? The prince slipped the journal back inside his coat.
Everything.
When Derm opened that window in the wall, I think something climbed through it after him and is here with us now, bent on malevolent destruction. I think it killed my family and wants to kill us all. That's why I have to find Asher. He's the only one with magic I can trust to fight against it.
Against what, sir? Nobody knows what lies beyond the wall. Nobody knows who lives there.
We know who used to live there. It took Auric a moment to work out the prince's meaning. When he did, he almost fell down.
Morg? Sir, you are raving.
Gar shook his head. I wish I was. Pelin, Morg knew how to make himself immortal. Understand, he was a magician with powers we can't begin to comprehend. The Dornan of Lur are mere shadows compared to our ancestors and what they could do, did do. It's all in the diary, and I tell you it's terrifying. Was madness contagious? He was starting to believe the prince. If you're right, if Morg really is among us, how is it nobody's noticed? Because he's clever. He's hiding. Hiding where? The prince's gaze dropped for a moment. He took a deep breath, let it out, looked up and answered. Inside Conroy Geralt. Auric turned away, one fist pressed to his aching chest. Baal, save him. Baal, save him. But he believed it. Last night, in all the mayhem, he'd seen King Conroy's face as he demanded Asha's beheading, seen him afterwards gloating over the body. Something inhuman and unnatural lurked there, deep inside his bones. The prince said softly, I'm the last living member of House Torvig, Pellin. For hundreds of years my family has shed its blood for the keeping of this kingdom. By all that's holy in this sacred house of rest, before countless generations of my witnessing family, I swear I've told you nothing but the truth. Please, will you help me? Auric stared at the ground. Time stopped, hanging on his answer. He looked up. Yes, Gar, I'll help you. And if it proves we're wrong, may Baal have mercy on our souls.
Oxbunder looked up in surprise as Auric walked back into the guardhouse.
Captain, something wrong?
Only everything. Still reeling from the prince's revelations, from his own mad decision to follow him blindly, break the law, free a prisoner. He called upon his 28 years of guarding experience, and showed the man nothing but a sheepish smile.
I tried to sleep, but all my leftover paperwork kept tapping me on the shoulder, he said. You know how I am.
Ox grinned.
Yes, sir, I do.
No trouble from the prisoner?
No, Captain.
Jessup still with him?
Bunder looked discomfited.
No.
You know his mother's poorly. He just wanted to see if she'd spent the night all right.
I didn't see the harm, sir. He's been on duty for nearly 2 days.
I checked the prisoner myself not 10 minutes ago, and he was out to the world, snoring.
I see. Well, I suppose that's all right.
He headed for the rear door leading to the cells. His heart was pounding so hard he was amazed Bunder couldn't hear it. But I'll have a quick look at him myself before I go upstairs. Carry on, Ox.
Praise Baal. The guardhouse's other prison cells were empty, all impulse to petty criminality swallowed by the enormous events of the past few weeks. He hurried along the cell-lined corridor to the room at the end, where Asha had been briefly held, where Matt now waited in equal danger. He opened the outer double-locked door and found the prisoner trying to hang himself with the torn-off sleeve of his shirt.
No, damn you! No!
With shaking hands, he fumbled the keys from his belt, jammed the right one in the lock, and wrenched the cell door wide open. The stablemaster was on his knees, swaying at the end of his improvised noose, wheezing, choking, his battered face suffused with blood and turning purple. Auric lunged at him, tore frantically at the knot around his neck, but had no hope of loosening it. Instead, he got his shoulder under the man's heaving chest and bellowed for Bunder.
Get me a knife!
He ordered, as Ox skidded into the outer cell. Gaping, Ox bolted out again and returned moments later with a dagger. Together they freed the strangling prisoner.
Captain, Captain,
Bunder stammered, horrified.
Never mind that now, Bunder. We'll talk about discipline later,
he growled, watching Matt's face fade from purple to red. His mind raced, seeking a way to turn this near disaster into success. It wasn't easy. He was the captain of the city. He spent his time putting people into prison, not thinking of ways to help them escape.
This man should have a pother, he said at last.
There's a pottery 2 streets over, said Bunda, eager to make amends.
I'll...
He shook his head.
No.
This is an important prisoner. He'd best be seen by the king's own man. Go to the palace and fetch Nix here.
But slowly,
he added, as Bunda made a dash for the door. After the hullabaloo last night, the townsfolk don't need to see you careering through the streets like a scalded cat. Walk there and walk back again, like you're out for a stroll, with a friend.
Walk back? Said Bunda, confused. But doesn't the pother have a carriage?
A very nice one, I believe, with royal bits and pieces painted all over it, Oryk said.
Humour me, Ox. Walk.
This city's been in a ferment for far too long. It's our job now to set a calm example.
Yes, sir,
said Bunda, still confused but trained to the teeth.
I'll be back with the pother directly.
But not too directly, Oryk hoped, as the sound of Bunda's retreating footsteps diminished. Well, he'd bought himself some time. Now to spend it wisely. Matt was breathing more easily now, slumped on his side, his face almost human again.
You shouldn't have stopped me, Captain,
he croaked, looking up through slitted eyes.
I'm going to die anyway.
Oryk glared, dragged the fool upright, and leaned him against the wall. As a precaution, he picked up the dagger and stuck it through his belt.
Well done. You've almost ruined everything. Sit there and do nothing. I won't be long.
Turning his back on Matt's bewilderment, he hurried to the rear of the guardhouse and opened the door, beckoned to Darren, once more hiding in the shadows.
Hurry! One of my lads could return any moment.
Darren stared in alarm.
Where's Matt? Inside. The damned fool tried to hang himself, and besides, there's his escape to be covered. Come in!
Wittering, Darren came. Matt's swollen jaw dropped when he saw the prince's secretary.
Darren, are you another Circle member? Is Oryk?
I haven't the faintest idea, said Darren, kneeling beside him and speaking quickly. Now hush up and listen. I'm getting you out of here. Prince Gar's orders. The kingdom's in danger and we need your help to save it.
I don't understand,
said Matt, rubbing at his bruised, chafed throat.
If you aren't part of the Circle, why...
Oryk kicked him, just hard enough to get his attention.
Can you take them to Asher?
Matt's face stilled.
Asher's dead. He's not, and we all know it. Do you know where to find him?
Please, Matt, Darren urged him as the stablemeister continued silent. This isn't a trick, I promise. We're trying to save you. Trust us, we're your only hope. The kingdom's only hope. His Highness is counting on you.
A riot of uncertainty in the injured man's face, an agony of indecision. They were running out of time. Oryk snatched the dagger from his belt, hauled Matt up and onto his feet, then shoved the weapon into his hand.
Stab me. What? No one will believe this unless I'm wounded. Stab me, you fool, and be quick about it. Do you want the king to find us? Could be he's on his way.
Matt lifted the dagger in front of his face, looking at it as though he'd never seen one before.
Say I do it. Say I stab you. Then what?
Then we run, Matt, to Asher, said Darren, on his feet again. His Highness is outside, hidden in a donkey cart. We have to go now, man, before it's discovered we're missing from the tower.
But Matt just shook his head, still dazed.
I can't. I don't know.
Oryk looked at Darren.
This won't work. He's addled with shock. You've got to get out of here, back to the tower. Think of another way to...
There is no other way,
said Darren. His face was flushed, his eyes alight with desperation.
Oh, sweet Baal, forgive me,
he gasped, snatched the dagger from Matt's unresisting fingers, and struck. Oryk choked as the blade sank deep into his shoulder. magically tempered steel sliced muscle, scraped bone. The pain was immediate, shocking. Hot, bright lights danced before his eyes, and the small cells spun, sparkling like glimfire. Without his permission, his knees buckled, and he sagged to the floor. Darren's hands were pressed to his face.
Oh dear, oh dear.
Oh dear was right. There was sweat on his face, icy as melted snow. His shoulder was on fire. Damn! Who'd have thought such a stringy old man would have such strength in him?
Go!
He croaked. His right hand hovered over the jutting dagger hilt. If he pulled the damn thing out, would he bleed to death right here on the floor?
Now! Flog that damned donkey till it drops in the road and don't look back! Nix is on his way. I'll be all right. Tell His Highness good luck. Tell Asher I'm sorry.
Yes, yes, said Darren, shaking, and took hold of Matt's arm to drag him from the cell. Matt pulled free.
Wait.
His dazed confusion had cleared. Beneath the bruises and bloodstains, he looked himself again, the calm and competent man who'd run a prince's stables.
We'll never get out of the city unrecognized.
We might do, cried Darren. We must risk it.
No,
said Matt, and turned to Darren, spread his hands wide and pressed them to the old man's face.
Stand still. This won't take a moment, I hope.
Pounded with pain, Auric watched as Matt's battered face contorted and he lost his last colour. Beneath his pressing hands, Darren cried out, protesting,
What are you doing? Stop it! Stop it!
Matt lowered his hands, staggered a little, and would have fallen if not for his shoulder pressed hard to the cell wall.
Did it work?
He muttered.
I've never done it before. Just had it done to me, once.
Shocked speechless, Auric looked into Darren's changed features. A moment earlier they had been thin, straight-nosed and sharp-chinned. Familiar. Now Darren wore the face of a stranger 10 years younger, placid and pouchy, with a bulbous nose and a spider-working of veins across his cheeks. He found his voice and whispered, disbelieving,
It worked. Your disguise, Darren. With magic.
Darren gasped.
Baal have mercy. Not you too, Matt.
Still leaning on the cell wall, Matt pressed his hands to his own face, groaned aloud, a sound of extreme distress, and nearly slid to the floor, retching. When his hands fell away, they revealed a second stranger.
It's called a blurring,
he said hoarsely. His new face was grey and sweating.
But we'll have to hurry. It won't last long.
Then go,
said Auric fiercely.
Now!
They bolted. Alone and bleeding, he sprawled face up on the prison cell floor. Before he could wonder if he'd done the right thing, the world around him turned scarlet, then black. His last clear thought, as consciousness left him, was something like a prayer.
Sweet blessed Baal, don't let me be wrong.
Chapter 31 Morg woke late in his unattended house, and for some little while indulged himself in the luxury of silence. Silence was an antidote to the memory of Holes's insistent yammering.
Conroyd, you must show yourself the weather worker in public. Conroyd, you must move into the palace. Conroyd, you must recall the lords and ladies now dallying in the country. Appoint a privy council. Soothe the worried populace. Decide upon an heir. Name a master magician. Conroyd! Conroyd! Conroyd!
He intended to feed the cleric to his demons personally when at last the wall came down. His regrettably unavoidable meeting with the man had lasted hours. Through it all he'd nodded and smiled and indicated approval, agreement, whatever was required to bring the audience to an end. but it seemed Hose had been storing up an inexhaustible supply of opinions, and he couldn't risk taking action. A swift and surreptitious examination of the prosing cleric's mind showed him a man peculiarly proofed against easy tampering. More of Baal's interference? He couldn't tell. Didn't care. In the end, it would make no difference. With gritted teeth, he'd survived the lecturing, and so had Holes. Barely. What he needed now was to bend his will towards the only thing that mattered, the next step in his undermining of Baal's infernal wall. That exquisite task completed, he would examine the stablemeister taken by Auric's men after the execution and... the execution. Beneath his cosseting blankets, Morg stretched with delight like a cat. Interfering, unexpected Asher was dead. Gar had wept. Recollection of the mewling cripple's grief bathed him in more pleasure, leaving him languorous and replete. He was aware, too, of Conroyd's pleasure in that brutal death. Conroyd had hated the Ulken with a passion nearly matching his own. Not that his docile prisoner said as much. Subdued at last, run out of words and curses, Conroyd sat silent in his cage now, but his feelings were as loud as any shout. The glow of sunlight behind the bedchamber's drawn curtains reminded him the day was aging rapidly. He rose, bathed, dressed, summoned food from his cookless kitchen, and then rode Asher's cowed stallion back to the weather chamber. Holes had been right about one thing, damn him. To allay suspicion, he must show the people of Lur their expected weather. So he made it rain, but with the magic corrupted, the spell altered, so that every drop of water falling from the sky pulled free a thread of the tapestry binding together the bitch whore's ancient barrier. Ancient, but not immortal. Overhead, the golden wall trembled, shuddered. Staring through the weather chamber's clear glass ceiling, Morg laughed and laughed to see it. Rode away light-hearted towards the city guardhouse, where waited the prisoner Matt, ripe for plucking. But instead of the cripple's former stablemeister, he found chaos. "It's a nasty wound, Your Majesty," Potha Nix informed him on the threshold of Auric's office. "The captain has lost considerable blood. He'll mend, but, Your Majesty, he's not ready for... Your Majesty, I must protest! My patient..." Thrusting the fool aside, ignoring his irrelevant gabble, Morg confronted Auric on his makeshift sickbed. "Well, what happened? And why was I not informed immediately?" Stripped to the waist and swathed in scarlet-stained bandages, Auric regarded him weakly. His skin had turned sickly, and his eyes were rimmed with red.
"Your Majesty, forgive me."
His voice was a whispering trickle.
"I failed you."
One of the guardsmen, a hulking brute, stepped forward from the background huddle of uniforms and bowed. "Your Majesty, the prisoner tried to hang himself. Captain Auric sent me to fetch him a pother, and while I was gone, the prisoner stabbed him near to death. He escaped." For one blinding moment, his rage was absolute, so that he nearly wiped them from existence with a word. Auric, Nix, the brutish guardsman.
"Your Majesty,"
Auric again, barely audible.
"I'd hoped to find him quickly, avoid the need to trouble you. I've many men out searching. He'll be recaptured, I swear it."
Rage subsided. So the stablemeister was missing. But did it really matter? Attempted suicide suggested secrets worth hiding, true, but equally it could have been fear. Asher was dead, and weatherworking had died with him. The wall, even now, was crumbling. What matter the fate of one Ulken, destined soon for fire wherever he'd run to? Not that he'd say so. Keeping all eyes focused on recent events, would mean less attention paid to him. He smiled, magnanimously forgiving.
Very well, Captain. I accept your apology. Continue your hunt for the miscreant. I trust implicitly your diligence shall find him in the end. Meanwhile, your men can enforce the Olcan curfew and the other restrictions arising from this new and criminal action. My man Willa shall advise you of the details.
He left behind him uneasy silence and a horrified exchanging of glances. Inwardly, he smiled. Downstairs in the guardhouse reception area, he was accosted by ubiquitous Willa, damp from the rain and puffing from his minimal exertions.
Your Majesty! Your Majesty! Oh, at last I found you!
For what purpose?
He asked coldly. The little toad had pretensions and required regular squashing. Willa stepped improperly close.
I have an urgent message, sir.
He had no interest in messages. Frowning at the repellent creature, he said,
Did you do as I bid, Willa, and see to Asher's remains?
Willa stepped back.
I supervised their disposal first thing this morning, Your Majesty, exactly as requested. The dead dogs are burned now, and their ashes scattered. The traitor is no more.
Excellent. And your message?
Your Majesty.
Willa's voice was lowered to a sibilant hiss.
Lord Sovold and Daltrey require an urgent audience.
Of course they did. Puling lick spittles, desperate for advancement.
Inform them I am unavailable for audience.
Willa swallowed convulsively.
Yes, Your Majesty. Your Majesty, they seemed quite determined. They'll ask me to ask you again. What shall I tell them?
Tell them a king does not account himself to his subordinates. Subordinates account themselves to their king.
Willa looked less than convinced.
Yes, Your Majesty. Your Majesty.
In the midst of leaving, he stopped and turned, let his displeasure fully reveal itself, and waited for Willa to cease his cringing.
Yes?
Faltering, stooped as though avoiding a blow, Willa crept close again.
There is just one more thing, sir. The palace provisioner was wondering when you thought to...
For all I care, Willa, the palace provisioner can drop dead of an og, he snapped. Delay me no further. I am fatigued with weatherworking and must recover my strength. The damage wrought by the traitor Asher is greater than even I imagined. Would you have me weak and incapable of fulfilling my sacred duties, of saving this kingdom from his black and ugly business?
Willa blanched.
No, sir. Oh, no.
Then desist your childish blatherings, and tell those who would tax me with trifles to quickly follow suit. I return now to my townhouse. If you're wise, you'll see I'm not disturbed.
Your Majesty,
said Willa, his obeisance folding him in half. Sweeping out of the guardhouse, Morg ignored the murmured reverent acknowledgements by guards and visitors alike. Paused on the steps, he savoured the slurry of rain splashing from the greeny-grey clouds he'd called with a thought. Olcan and Doranan in the street beyond the guardhouse gates stopped to bow or curtsy. He ignored them too. Stared instead at Baal's great wall, clinging tight to the mountains. Was it his imagination, or did the glowing gold seem tarnished? And along its very top, was that a hint, the merest suggestion of a tatter? A hem unravelling? He rather thought it was. A lackey brought him the silver stallion. He mounted, smiling, and rode away. Just as dusk was falling, Daphne heard the cottage's side gate creak. She dropped the book she'd not really been reading, convinced at first it was a dream. Three false alarms she'd raised already, was near worn out with hope and waiting. But this time it wasn't her frantic mind playing tricks. This time there was the sound of a tired horse, no, two tired horses, plodding along the track outside the cottage, and the glimpse through the window of a cart rolling past, driven past a bent old woman wrapped tight in a blanket. Vera. Vera was home, which meant Asher. She bolted into the kitchen so fast she banged into the rickety table and nearly fell flat on her face. Rubbing her hip and cursing, she shoved the back door open and tumbled into the midst of Vera's vigorously scratching hens. They fled, cackling. The sun was sliding towards the brooding treetops, and a chill wind was up, rattling their branches. Vera slumped alone on the wagon's driving seat, her face half hidden in the hood of her cloak. Little brown Bessie had been replaced by two tall, raw-boned greys, and the wagon they pulled was different too.
"Vera," she cried, "I thought you'd never get here. Did it go right? Do you have him? What happened? And where's Matt? Quick, quick, tell me, quick!"
Vera pushed the hood back on her shoulders. In the fading light, she looked exhausted. So, for that matter, did the two strange horses. They were splashed with mud to their bellies, and their heads hung almost to the ground.
"Matt and me got separated. I swapped Bessie and my old cart for faster new horses and a wagon with a hidey hole in it. Now stop your questions, child, and give me a hand with our innocent mage."
All she could do was stand and stare.
"What do you mean you got separated? Did you leave Matt behind? Vera!"
"Daphne!" the old woman snapped. "I can't lift Asher out on my own. Help me! I'll tell you what I can once he's safe inside."
The bony grey horses stood patiently as Vera clambered down from the wagon and began fiddling with the side of the box seat. Muttering under her breath, she poked and prodded while Daphne watched, feeling sick.
"Asher's in there?" she demanded. "He'll be suffocated."
Vera ignored her, poked and prodded some more, then said,
"Ha!"
with a tired satisfaction. The side of the box seat dropped open, and Daphne saw the soles of two bare and dirty feet. Asher. She leaped forward and helped Vera drag him slowly from his prison until his toe tips touched the grassy ground and she could wrap her arms around his unconscious body. The weight of him had her staggering.
"He struck," said Vera, leaning against the wagon and catching her breath. "It was safer and easier."
Drugged. That was unlikely to please him. She could feel his slow and heavy breathing, warm between her shoulder blades. The rank smell of him caught in the back of her throat.
"Let's get him inside then," she said.
Her voice was rough with pent-up tears and barely realized relief.
"Before he wakes and causes a ruckus."
Vera put her arm around him from the other side, and together they half carried, half dragged him into the cottage.
"My room,"
Vera grunted. They lowered him onto the sagging mattress in Vera's tiny bedchamber and took a moment to recover their breathing. Then, as Vera lit her bedside lamps, Daphne looked into her husband's face.
"Oh, Vera,"
she whispered.
"I know, child, I know,"
said Vera. Shockingly, she sounded on the verge of tears.
"I'd best go see to those horses and the wagon, and the chickens."
She sniffed, looking disappointed.
"You might have done right by my chickens, child."
Daphne flushed.
"I'm sorry,
And what about my pigs? Did you forget about my pigs as well?"
"No, no, I didn't forget. I've been waiting, worrying.
Vera sighed.
"I'll see to the pigs then, too. You stay in here. Make Asher comfortable and sit with him till I'm done outside. Then we'll clean and physic him. In the meantime, if he wakes..."
She frowned.
"But I doubt he will. I gave him enough grobble root to..."
"Grobble root?" said Daphne. "Vera, how could you risk..."
"Because I had to," the old woman retorted. "And it didn't kill him, so let it be. We've bigger things to worry about than whether or not I slipped him a sleeping draught.
Daphne realized then how close Vera was to collapsing, and felt ashamed.
I'm sorry, she murmured. Of course you know what you're doing.
Vera nodded.
And mind you remember that. Now I'll be back directly.
The bedroom door banged shut behind her. Daphne frowned at it, then turned her attention to the heavily stuporous Asher. First thing first, get him out of his stinking, horrible clothes. She'd only undressed him twice before, and both times were occasions for joy. Now, though, when she saw the extent of his injuries, she wept a little for what had been done to him, what he'd endured, and what he had yet to face once consciousness returned. She threw the stained and filthy shirt and trews on the floor, settled his head more comfortably on the pillows, drew a light blanket over him, and waited for Vera. The sun had set completely by the time the old woman returned to the bedroom carrying her medicine tin, a bowl of warm water, and a bag full of rags. Working silently, swiftly, they washed the dirt, dried blood and caked pus from Asher's bruised and crusted skin, spread his wounds with salves and ointments, acridly healing. Now Daphne was glad of the grubble root, because they must have been hurting him. Through it all, Asher failed to stir. At last the nasty task was done. Clean and physicked, dressed in an old nightshirt and coddled with blankets, Asher slept on. Vera touched her arm.
Into the kitchen, child, she whispered. I could do with some tea.
She smoothed Asher's hair a final time and followed Vera from the chamber, unspeaking. Watched in continued silence as the old woman waved her to a chair, refusing her assistance, and put the kettle on the hob. She looked pale, moved slowly, painfully, as she dribbled honey into their steaming teacups and tipped butter biscuits onto a plate.
The important thing is, she said as she finally settled down at the table, we got him here safely.
Yes, yes, that was important. It was everything. Daphne sipped her scalding tea cautiously, but didn't risk a biscuit. Her occupied belly was unforgiving now. Please, Vera, tell me what happened. Rafel, is he? Vera nodded.
Yes, he's dead, just as I planned it.
I'm so sorry.
Staring into the depths of her mug, Vera seemed not to hear.
Rafel's dead and Asher's alive, and good Matthias is missing. I wonder if this is what prophecy wanted.
Matt was missing?
I don't know,
Daphne whispered, reached out and covered Vera's hand with her own.
Why don't you tell me all of it, and I'll see if I can't answer.
Not lifting her eyes, Vera nodded again, then haltingly began to speak.
He smiled at me, you know,
she whispered.
When I gave him the potion and bade him to drink, he smiled and kissed my cheek and thanked me for the chance to do such service.
Tears wet her cheeks, unheeded.
I held him as best I could while the poison worked its will on him. I thought I'd made it painless, but at the end he felt